and a warm welcome to Celebrating Success. Thank you for joining me. I'm Pauline Barclay, author of 9 published books. My latest is a cosy mystery, Past Secrets and Lies, the second in the Gardner and Chataway Cosy Mystery series. I'm also the founder of Chill Awards for Independent Authors. Celebrating Success is about meeting a variety of people from all walks of life and interests. Today on Celebrating Success, I'm catching up with Mark Welsh. For over 30 years, Mark enjoyed the competitive sport of rally driving, where speed, split-second thinking and the adrenaline to win made sure he and his co-driver were on the podium, splashing champagne and picking up champion trophies. Please sit back and enjoy meeting a man from the fast lane.
Hi, Mark. Great to see you again. It's a lot of years since we've met up.
It's been a while, yes.
And I know you had a very busy, quite manic corporate life, but even during those years of being really busy and traveling to the other sides of the world, you managed to fit in rally driving. And in fact, I can recall being in your car, going down an ordinary road, and it felt like we were on a rally track then. So tell me how you got into rally driving and you know, the years you did it.
Well, I did rallying for nearly 30 years, and it all started a little bit by accident, really, because I was quite lucky. As a kid, I used to go up to the local airfield, and the airfield changed hands, and the guy that bought the airfield had a son the same sort of age as me. And because the guy who owned the airfield was quite rich, instead of his son getting like a rally chopper for Christmas, he'd get a motorbike or a car. And we were able to drive these vehicles on the airfield. So I was about 11 years old when I learned to drive. And I learned to drive in this thing called a Haflinger, which is basically an Austrian sheep farmer's four-wheel drive vehicle. And none of it was on made-up roads. So we used to bomb around the back of the airfield on sort of forest tracks. And I thought, yeah, this is quite good fun. I quite like this. And then completely by accident, a few years later, I was out on my bike as a sort of teenager, and I came across a stage rally going on in the woods fairly close to the airfield. And I was completely blown away by the speed of these cars on basically a gravel surface. And I thought, one day I'm going to do this. So fast forward another, I don't know, 10 years, I was in my 20s, and I had a friend who had done rallying. And he said to me, we ought to get a car. And I think he said it partly in jest. And I thought, yeah, we should. It's something I always wanted to do. I think I can afford it. I mean, the fact of the matter is you can never afford it, because there's always someone doing it who's got big, deeper pockets. But I thought I can afford it. So I bought myself a Mark II Escort, which is still kind of the bread and butter of rallying. And I phoned my mate up and said, I've got a car. And he went very, very quiet. And he said, oh, I suppose we better go and do an event. So in April 1988, I did my first rally on Salisbury Plain, which was called the Driveshaft Rally. And it was really a huge step into the unknown. We drove the car there, which is always a bit of a risk, because if you damage it, you've got to get it home. I forgot to wear a T-shirt under my race suit, so I had like a shirt on. And the whole thing was bordering on comical. But by the time we got to the end of the rally, we both gelled as a sort of co-driver team, and we were setting some quite competitive times. So after that, we got a little bit more into it. So the first rally, I think we finished something like 26th out of 80 finishes. But the second rally, we did rather much better. We finished 9th overall, and we were second in class. And we actually finished the final stage with no back tyres. We changed the tyres because the track was so rough. And we thought, right, this is an insurance policy. And we'd done a mile of a 3 or 4 mile stage. And the first tyre went, then the second tyre went. We just carried on with the back of the car banging around. And then as we finished, the tyres came off the rim and narrowly missed the finish marshal. So that was it, really. After that, my friend Eamon hung up his rally helmet because I think he was getting a bit stressed about it. And another guy took over who really stayed as my co-driver for the rest of the time. Guy called Mark, another guy called Mark. Hence, we called ourselves Mark II Motorsport. And it was interesting. Didn't take too long before we realised that gravel rallying was great fun because the sensation of the car and the handling of the car is completely different to what you'd experience on a road. For example, you'd come to a corner, and to get the car to turn right, the first thing you do is turn left, and you set up a kind of pendulum effect where the car then starts to move around and you take the corner. So it was really, really thrilling, very, very good fun, very addictive. But we almost watched our car get pebble dashed to nothing after each rally. So you never finished an event without some sort of minor damage on the car. So after a couple of years of that, we then decided to go tarmac rallying, which is high speed, much more fun. It's more akin to sort of circuit racing in terms of the tyre technology and that, the sort of stuff that you use. But the roads are, to a greater extent, unknown. So you rely much more heavily on the co-driver calling out pace notes. And that was pretty well the mainstay of the rallying that we then did, again, with a Mark II Escort that was sort of highly modified. And we had some success in that. We won our first rally in 1993. So kind of 5 years after we started. And then we went on to win some championships in that car. And in 95, we then acquired an Escort Cosworth body shell. And I'll never forget it because it was like a massive step up getting this body shell. And in my mind, it was a state-of-the-art rally car. When I got it home, my wife looked at me and went, "What is this?" And I said, it's my new rally car. She said, "It's a body shell. It didn't have any glass in it. Didn't have a dashboard. It was literally a shell." And we bought it. It basically had been used by a guy who was a Ford works driver as a reconnaissance car. So basically the works teams, when they go all around the world, they will look at the rally stages and they'll do their pace notes, and then they'll jump in a proper rally car and do the rally. So this was like a practice car. But got the car home, and over the course of the next year, built it up in my mum's garage, and we went rallying. And that's when it really got competitive. And you get to a point, I think, in any sport where you start doing it for fun. The fun wears off a little bit in terms of the kind of wide-eyed adventuring. Then it becomes competitive. It's still fun, but it's a different sort of fun.
So you're onto tarmac. So where were these roads you were rallying down?
So when we first started, a lot of the places that we used were basically disused airfields, because at the time, legislation meant that you couldn't close a public road on the UK mainland to do a rally. That's now changed. So these closed tarmac roads, road events, are run in the UK. But at that time, we had to use private ground. So some of them were old airfields and farm tracks. And then there were quite big army places. One in particular, which is quite daunting, is a place called Epynt, which is near the Brecon Beacons. And that is, anyone that knows anything about rallying, and particularly tarmac rallying, Epynt will strike a bit of fear in them, because it's basically an army, live army firing range that they use for sort of troop movements, but it's crisscrossed with these very, very narrow tarmac roads, which are quite undulating, and really you need a good co-driver because they're quite deceptive. You'll come over a crest of a hill and you would estimate the road's going to go to the right, it goes to the left. It looks like it's going to be a very fast right, it's a very slow left. So the attrition rate on those rallies is quite high. And if you have an accident, it's not going to be a small one, because the speeds, 130 miles an hour, 135 miles an hour was not uncommon.
So you've just actually brought into the subject my next question was accidents. Dare I ask how many and how serious?
I think I had one accident where I badly damaged the car. Other than that, only minor scrapes and scuffs. But the longer you do rallying, you know that something like that is always a factor. And I'll be honest, it was something when I decided to hang up my crash helmet a couple of years ago, I went, I've had a pretty good run at this. Quit while the going's good.
So what kind of gear did you wear inside the car for safety, apart from a belt?
Yeah, so safety was always paramount. The cars themselves had an integrated safety roll cage. The earlier Escorts, they were bolted into the car, and where they bolt into the car, it's reinforced. So if you do have an accident, the cage basically is like a survival cell. In the later cars, the Cosworths, they were welded in, so they were very much part of the structure of the car from the start. The seats were molded more or less around your body, so there were various different types of seats that you could get, but you would find one that was a very, very snug fit. And then you'd have harnesses that held you into position, and they would be what they call six-point harnesses. So you'd have two fixings over your shoulder, two fixings around your waist, and two crutch fixings. So you could tell I did quite well on the accident front because I still have a fairly low voice. the race suits that we had were fireproof, and we wore three-layer fireproof race suits, which would be similar to what the Formula One drivers would wear, topped off with a crash helmet. I used to wear a full-face crash helmet just in case something came through the windscreen. But in rallying, a lot of the guys wear open-face crash helmets, which are like the early motorbike ones. And we would communicate by way of an intercom. So the crash helmets were sort of wired together. Inside the car, you'd also have fire extinguishers that you could take out if something happened to the car and you could put it out. But also a fire extinguisher that was plumbed into the fuel area and the engine bay area that could be operated either inside the car or externally if you couldn't get out of the car and there was a marshal there. So quite a lot of safety features.
An enormous amount of safety features there, Mark. I mean, you've talked about buying the car and prepping it ready for the rallying on the various roads. But the amount of safety gear, one that you have to wear and one the car has to be fitted with, makes it an expensive hobby these days.
It does indeed. And the safety gear is lifed. So typically the seats have a 5-year life. And so the belts and harnesses, irrespective of whether you've been involved in an accident. Obviously, if you have an accident, you throw them away, you buy new. So you have to kind of, after a certain period of time, replace them anyway. And it does make it quite expensive. But, you know, what cost is your safety? It's the most important.
Indeed, yeah. But it's good that you can do something like that and be, you know, as safe can be with what's available. So we've got the safety route. We've done all the racing around the roads. What did it really feel like when you were absolutely 130 miles around and just about to go into another bend? What did it really feel like?
It's probably like a Spitfire pilot used to feel when he jumped in his plane going up to sort of defend the UK. The adrenaline rush is something else. It makes other things seem fairly mundane. When you're flying along and your co-driver is saying, right, 300 yards K right, which is a sort of 45 degree right, and you can't see that, and you come over a crest hill and you do it, it's almost like a machine. It all starts to work really, really well. And you're almost driving by second nature, but it is very, very exhilarating.
And you must have come out of that car every time on a huge high.
Yeah, I think it was probably like drinking 15 cups of espresso in very short measure. I mean, people used to say to me, I'd kind of go into like almost like a trance. But you do, you concentrate to a level that you wouldn't necessarily think you could. And your co-driver's doing the same, but he rarely, very rarely looks up because there's not enough time. But yeah, it is a very, very exhilarating sport at high speed. I'm glad I've stopped, but I'm also really, really glad I did it.
Amazing. So how many championships, how many cups, how many trophies did you win over those 30 years?
Okay, well, so we won our first event in 1993. In 1994, we were second overall in the South of England Time at Rally Championship for club and cars. I think probably our best results in 2009, we won the Rally of the Midlands, and that was part of a national time at championship. There were basically two championships at the time. There was one for what we call world rally cars. So they were highly technologically advanced cars that were similar to what the works teams were using, but maybe a year or two older. And then we were in a championship for more agricultural cars. So, for example, we had a manual gearbox, whereas the World Rally cars would have a sequential box. They'd have thinking differentials, which put the different amounts of power to different wheels. Ours was much more mechanical. So we took part in that championship for a couple of years, and we were second one year and third the next. And yeah, we won the Rally of the Midlands, which was fantastic. That had stages at a place called Myra, which is one of the testing grounds for new vehicles. A couple of country houses where you go through the grounds of a country house, and there's lots and lots of spectators. So nice memories of spraying champagne for that. That particular event. So I think we rallied a long time. We won seven events and we had some success in some championships. We certainly won one of the regional championships a couple of years running when we had the Mark II Escort as well. So good times.
Fantastic, Mark. And now you've hung your helmet up, as you say, thrown the car keys to one side, and you've taken from four wheels to two wheels. Now, I know you're quite into these two wheels, but today we're going to just stick with the four wheels. And I want you to come back, if you will, when you come back from your wonderful trip to New Zealand, because Mark's going to New Zealand after he's spoken to me. Will you come back and talk to us about the two wheels?
I'd love to, because I'm as passionate about that as I was about rallying. And there are a lot of benefits, particularly when you reach my kind of older age.
Mature.
Thank you. I was struggling for the words, actually. I knew you'd know what I meant for me. There are some really, really good benefits, both mental and health benefits, to being active as you get a bit older. And I'd certainly like to talk to you about that.
Well, we look forward to that. Now, you've just finally tell us you have finished rallying. Can you just say, do you miss it?
It's really odd. I thought I would, and occasionally I do, but on the whole, no, I don't. As I said before, it's something that I really, really enjoyed. I got to the point where the logistics of going to these places, the bigger the rallies, the more logistics are involved. And we were quite lucky. We had a guy from our motor club, a guy called Barry Guess, lovely fella. And he would, if he was like our team manager, so he would work out where we needed to be at a certain time, what tyres we needed, what fuel we needed, and he would run what we call a chase car. So he would basically make sure that everything was done in the right place at the right time. But personally, particularly with a busy work life and a young family, I got to the point where I loved driving the car, but what I didn't love was carting it around to have things done to it, and getting to events, getting from events. I can remember the year we won the Rally of the Midlands. It was a two-day event, and I had to start. In fact, the scrutineering was done at a Total garage up near Sutton Coldfield, I think it was. And we got there, or I got there, with the van, with the trailer, with the rally car, and the guys who came to support us, I mean, they did it for the love, and I just kept them fed and watered, but they'd got held up in some kind of traffic problem. So I was taking this car off the trailer and I banged my head on the exhaust as I was taking the ramps off the trailer. It started to rain and I can remember going, what the heck am I doing here? Fast forward 48 hours, we're spraying champagne, we've had the best rally win of our careers, and I'd forgotten all about banging my head on the exhaust of the car in the pouring rain.
But you had 30 fantastic years, Mark. Thank you so much for sharing those 30 years.
Yes.
It's been great and it's been wonderful to catch up with you. I know we go back many, many years.
No, and what I'd say to people is that if you want to get into motorsport.
Okay, Mark. I think we've got a little bit of a hiccup on our line at the moment. I can hear you, I can see you. You can't possibly hear me.
No, you're back. You're back.
I think we did a little bit of hiccup there. Well, this is what happens when we do a live podcast. I'm going to say thanks, Mark, for joining me today. I'm really looking forward to talking to you when you get back from your lovely long trip to New Zealand. Though I know from your corporate days, the other side of the world is not such a huge journey for you, because you did it many, many times during your corporate years. So looking forward to talking to you again soon. And I'll say bye for now, Mark, and we'll catch up in the new year. Have a great Christmas.
Great for you. Thank you, and you. It's great to talk.
A huge thank you, Mark, for joining me and sharing some of your experience behind the wheel of a rally car. I don't know about you listeners, but I had my foot firmly on the brake when Mark mentioned driving at 140 miles. As always, a huge thank you for joining me, and I can't wait to share your company again very soon. Until next time, I hope the sun is shining on your face and in your heart. You can listen to all my podcasts at paulinebarclay.podbean.com. And you're more than welcome to share my podcasts with all your family and friends. I hope you will. Don't forget, you can find out more about me on my website, paulinebarclay.co.uk. Ta-ta for now.